Welcome back to the Roundtable. This morning, we share the first in a six-part series entitled An Adventurous Life in Diplomacy, Ambassador Robert Gassende in Conversation with Jim Ketterer. Ambassador Robert Gassende served as a diplomat in the U.S. Foreign Service from the early 1960s to the end of the 1990s. From his childhood in Massachusetts to the highest levels of diplomacy, his life story is filled with adventures, challenges, and historic moments. His career intersected with some of the most important places, people, and events in the second half of the 20th century, including Libya just before Gaddafi, Poland during the Cold War, Somalia during Black Hawk Down, South Africa during apartheid, and Russia during Yeltsin's rule, plus positions in Washington and terms as diplomat in residence at Harvard and Georgetown. To mark the 100th anniversary of the Foreign Service, Ambassador Gassende is in conversation on the Roundtable with Jim Ketterer, regular Roundtable panelist and senior fellow at the Bard Center for Civic Engagement.
This is Jim Ketterer. I am here at WAMC with Ambassador Robert Gassende, who I worked for and with for many, many years. And we are here to talk about his life story that starts in Western Massachusetts and goes through a career serving overseas in the United States Foreign Service, a career that intersected with some of the most important events of the second half of the 20th century. Welcome, Bob.
Thanks, Jim.
It's good to have you here and good to be telling this story. You know, so many people think about ambassadors. They think about the diplomatic corps and they think about those old phrases of wearing striped pants and cookie pushers and overseeing negotiations on obscure things around a conference room table in Geneva. And all of those things are true to a certain extent, but they're not really part of your story, particularly as it started. You are originally from Wilbraham, Massachusetts, right?
Actually, no, I'm from North Wilbraham.
All right.
North Wilbraham. It's along Route 20. It's the working class section of Wilbraham.
Outside of downtown metropolitan Wilbraham.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is also the home of Friendlies. The main thing we want to talk about in this segment is the start to your story. So if you could just give us a little sense about your days growing up and how you started to have a glimmer of interest in doing something overseas.
Sure. I grew up in North Wilbraham, as we said. I am the child of immigrants. My father came from northern Spain, my mother from Renfrew in Scotland. I was much moved by a high school teacher that I had in Springfield, Massachusetts, a wonderful lady named Eleanor Reardon. She's the one who really got me interested in the outside world in the very beginning. That led to me changing my major in college from accounting to history and political science. When I registered to go to college, I sort of looked at the major opportunities and I saw accounting. That sounded good, so I signed up for accounting. Little did I realize that I was not suited to being an accountant at all. So then I ended up changing my major to history and political science. And Eleanor was the one who, more than anything, influenced that decision of mine.
And you went to college
right there in Springfield, at a place called American International College, founded in 1885 with the goal of doing something that's still hard to do, awarding undergraduate credit for work at schools abroad, for students who had had high school education and post-high school, secondary, university-level education abroad. They would evaluate that, give some credit for what they had studied, and let the students go on and do their degree at AIC. My father, who studied to be a priest in northern Spain, came to AIC. They evaluated what he had done and gave him credit for all the language study that he had done. And so instead of spending, I guess, probably 4 years at AIC, he spent 2.5 years and got a degree and finished college. He came to the U.S. in 1922 and finished AIC later in that decade. And then I ended up going to AIC 30 years after him.
After graduation, you met and married Mary Beth, who would be your partner in these international adventures. But what was your first job out of college?
Mary Beth and I were each teaching school in Western Massachusetts in a town called East Longmeadow. My principal was a man named Elwin Doubleday. Yes, of baseball Doubleday fame. Elwin had been a tank colonel in World War II. I was in the Massachusetts Army National Guard, and so he and I sort of had a relationship because of this common reserve officer relationship. He took a job as chief of party on a project in the eastern region of Uganda to build a secondary school and teacher training college for women in the eastern region of Uganda.
So can I just clarify?
Sure.
So chief of party is international development lingo for someone who oversees a project. And these are projects that were and are funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development, our main federal government agency that carries out such projects around the world.
That's exactly right. Elwin went out to Uganda in 1963. He came home at Christmas time. He had gone out there initially on his own. He came home at Christmas time to pick up his family. But he called me and he said, "You and Mary Beth should join me in Uganda." I turned to Mary Beth and I said, "What do you think of that?" And she said, "Why not? Let's do it." And that gets me to one fundamental key. Mary Beth played a key role at every moment in my international experience, mainly by taking the lead. We got the job in Uganda, for example, because they needed her to teach at that school. She taught physics and chemistry, and she had a graduate degree in institutional cookery. They needed someone to supervise the food service program at the school, the residential school we were going to. And they needed math and science teachers much more than they needed me as an English language and history teacher.
So you were in the old phrase from the old Foreign Service, you were the trailing spouse.
I was the trailing spouse. But she also told them when they offered her a job and said they didn't need me, she said, "Well, if there's not a job for the two of us, then we're not interested."
Yeah, which is an important element of being the dynamic duo that I know that the two of you are, that you have always done this experience together.
Exactly.
And, you know, I just think that many people don't realize that in addition to the State Department and the formal diplomacy that we carry out, we also have people around the world working on development projects directly for USAID or on contracts, as you were, and also that someone can come into those positions through teaching and through nutrition and other things that are not, I think, what most people think about when they think about training for diplomacy.
Exactly. There's nothing more important for the fundamentals of diplomacy, in my view, than language learning.
Yeah, and that's something we're going to hear a lot about throughout the arc of your career, is the importance of English language teaching. So you're in eastern Uganda. You're working on this USAID project. You had mentioned in passing that you had been, and for many years, you were in the National Guard, and that military experience also played an important role in not only the beginnings of your career, but as we will hear about, in various elements of your career being a diplomat.
Yes.
Having an understanding of what the military does, but what the limitations are of the military.
Yes.
So you're in Uganda. How long were you there?
We were there about 3 years.
3 years. That's a good long time. And undoubtedly, you got to explore more of East Africa while you were there.
It was amazing because during that period, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania were in something called an East African Union. They had combined services for international travel, for diplomacy, for foreign affairs. So if you got a resident permit in either Kenya, Uganda, or Tanzania, you were free to travel across the whole area. And we did that as much as we could during the time that we lived in Uganda. It was a stunning time.
Now, speaking of that time and the overall atmospherics of that time, you know, when you mentioned that you initially went out there in 1963, so John Kennedy was still president. And I can recall you telling me, and I've heard you say to multiple audiences over the years, that when John Kennedy, in his inaugural address, asked people to say, to think to themselves, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, that really resonated with you and your generation.
That had a sparkling impact on us. We thought that made good sense. We shouldn't be asking for what the government was going to hand out, but rather what we might do for our country. That no doubt moved us in the direction of going to Uganda and trying to do something for the good old USA.
But having worked on many USAID projects myself, I know that there's a beginning and there's an end to that contract. So at some point, you both have given up your teaching positions back in the U.S. The project comes to an end at a certain point, and you have to figure out what to do next.
By then, we're bitten by the Africa bug. Compared to going back and living for 40 years, teaching 40 or 50 years in East Longmeadow, Massachusetts, we were bitten by the Africa bug. We decided we would try to seek employment in the Foreign Service. And so I applied.
What did you decide to apply to? Because again, I think many people think, okay, we have the State Department, that's our diplomatic corps, but it's actually a lot more complicated than that.
Well, at that point, we had three agencies really dealing with our international relations. The Department of State, which is our Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the U.S. Agency for International Development, an organization run by a woman named Samantha Power now, and the United States Information Agency. I became friendly with the cultural affairs officer at the embassy in Kampala, and he suggested that I might want to apply to work with USIA, and we ended up doing that.
And how would you describe the overall mission of the U.S. Information Agency?
The mission was very clear. We handled cultural and information activities for embassies around the world. The people who did that kind of work in embassies around the world work for the U.S. Information Agency. So if you are a press officer, you work for USIA. An information officer, you work for USIA. A cultural affairs officer, exchanges officer, you work for USIA, not for the Department of State.
Okay.
There was importance in that because we had a kind of bureaucratic independence from the Department of State. The department always knew what we were doing and hopefully supported it, but they didn't necessarily have to support it for us to do it. We had a separate independent budget.
And that is part of the theme that we're going to hear more about as we continue to tell your story in the next episode. I'm Jim Ketterer, speaking with Ambassador Robert R. Gassende about his career in the Diplomatic Corps in a special six-part series for the Roundtable on WAMC. This year marks the 100th anniversary of the U.S. Foreign Service.